Welcome to Feels Like Healing, a series of conversations between myself, Al Lewis, and individuals who have turned to creativity as a way of helping them heal. Our need for healing is universal, however, the reasons behind it can be oh so varied. A difficult childhood, a traumatic experience, or perhaps a bereavement and our need to process grief. My search for healing stems from the death of my dad, who died when I was 21 from multiple sclerosis. I believe that hearing other people's stories can help us to process ours, and that the act of being creative can help turn something seemingly hopeless and incomprehensible into something beautiful and hopeful. These conversations are here to provide solace and inspiration, and to show you that healing can happen when we take our deepest pain and turn it into a work of art. This is Feels Like Healing. My guest this week on Feels Like Healing is Stephen Wilson Jr., a singer-songwriter from rural Indiana in the USA. As a teenager, Stephen moved to Nashville to pursue a degree in microbiology, but it was there after finishing his degree that he started to pursue his other passion, music, and he started indie rock band Otto Vaughn. After that band split, he went back into science and worked for several years as an R&D scientist at Mars. Until faced with the prospect of a life climbing the corporate ladder, Stephen decided to take a leap of faith and pursue his dream of becoming a songwriter. A couple of years later, in 2018, his father died at 59. Stephen has been quoted as saying that music was the only thing that had any real ability to help him understand grief. The proof of this is in Son of Dad, his debut album, which came out in 2023. So given that Stephen is talking about all the things that are very apt for this podcast, I thought that it would be a perfect time to talk to him about his album and about the reasons behind making it. So, hello, Stephen. How are you?
Hey, I'm very good. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks for coming on board. So yeah, let's dive straight in. You've made an album all about your dad, all about the fact that his legacy is now part of your life. And I suppose the first question would be, what compelled you to make this album and to make it so overtly about your dad and about your grief?
Oh, well, when I was making the album, you know, I was really just kind of documenting what I was going through. Because I've been working on this album for about 4 years. and I released it on the 5-year anniversary of his death. To say that I planned that would be the biggest lie in the world, you know, because there's just no way I could have planned it. It was very much a kind of a God thing, or kind of following something way bigger than me, and not mm-hmm. necessarily, when I say following it, I mean just not fighting it. And these mm-hmm. songs, a few of them I wrote before he died. And a lot of them are about him. Like, you know, he was a great inspiration for songs for me. Just talking to him, he was my best friend. I used to get so many song ideas from him. And so some of the songs on there they were before he died, but they were like some of his favorite songs, and a lot of them were very much inspired by him. So I kept those on there because of that fact. Like one of them I played at his funeral. It was his favorite song. You know, I was a staff songwriter before. I didn't ever really think of myself as an artist. My dad was like my biggest champion. He was always like, he always believed in me more than I believed in myself. Like literally from day one, he was always speaking something into my life that I never would have believed. So he was like such a great source of encouragement, and he was a boxer and just a really hard worker. So determination and perseverance was just like his thing, and following your dreams and all that, because he wanted to be a pro fighter, and he ended up having to raise 3 kids, and so his boxing dreams kind of got shattered, and he was very much on the way. So like for me, following my dreams, when I quit my job as a scientist, my dad was pretty much the only person in my corner at that time, yeah. You know, like, because everybody else was like, you're crazy, man. You're going to quit this incredible job with this company with all these benefits and all this upward mobility and all this future money to go write songs for like literally no money, for like poor man's change, for like you can make more money working at McDonald's than you can make working at a staff songwriter. And so it was a real like, and you know, it takes a while to, it's not like you just, I quit my job at Mars and suddenly I was writing songs, you know, like.
What was the thought process behind that? Like, what, had there been a breakup of a relationship or a change in your life situation that made you feel suddenly brave enough to make that leap?
No, I actually had a boss there who I was doing, you know, I was kind of climbing the company ladder and whatnot. And he told me, he noticed me like writing songs all the time. Like he knew that's what I wanted to do. I was working in a lab or working in the office and I'd always just be writing songs. And he told me like, hey dude, you know, you don't belong here. Like straight up. He's like, you're doing really well here, but I can tell you don't belong here. And, but you can stay here and you're going to do really well. You're going to keep climbing because they like you here and they're going to keep, you know, grooming you from like upward mobility and all that stuff. And he used this metaphor, like the power of words is, words have always been extremely powerful for me. And he said, they're about to put the golden handcuffs on you. And I was like, oh, I don't like that. Whatever it is, he's like, you're gonna make more money than you've ever made, but you're gonna be handcuffed to this desk forever, and you're not gonna, your dreams of being a songwriter are gonna be gone. And you know, my dad was still alive at that time. This would have been like 2013, and you know, after hearing that, I knew like the voice in my head was just getting louder and louder and louder, like you're not supposed to be here.
Had you had dreams of being a songwriter? Had that been an idea for you? Is it something you could potentially be?
Yeah, that's all I really ever wanted to be. That's all I thought about, was just writing songs. I was really touched by songs as a kid, like songs kind of saved my life. So I really wanted to figure out like the wizardry behind it. I was raised, you know, by my dad, and I spent a lot of my childhood like perpetually worried about my mother. And she was in some abusive relationships with men that she was married to after my dad. And yeah, you know, this song called Don't Take the Girl by Tim McGraw came on the radio when I was a kid. And I remember I was able to copy and paste my mother's story into that song. So like really that song in the weirdest way possible, even though Tim McGraw didn't write it, it was written by Larry Johnson and Craig Martin. And like that song just was able to help me understand how I felt about my mother and how much I loved her. And it just, for whatever reason, just kind of helped me rationalize like my fear of losing her. And that's when I realized music was this more than just notes and sounds and just like feel good beats. And like, I wanted to, like that seemed like magic to me, like wizardry. That's what got me into songwriting, really essentially that particular moment. And I wanted to figure out how to do that as well. You know, in 2013, that voice had gotten so loud that like, I just remember just, it was almost like it was screaming in my ear the whole time I was there. Like, you're not supposed to be here. You're not, but it started off really soft and it just kept getting louder and louder and louder and louder. And then my boss kind of had that conversation with me and he really corroborated everything that I was, he corroborated the voice. Like he could, it's almost like he could hear it himself. I put in my 2 weeks resignation not long after that conversation, and to much surprise to everybody at the office, like, what are you doing? You're gonna quit this to go write songs? And I had to go wait tables and bartend. I had to do like all the just the grimy jobs. I had to wait on my old like team members one day. Like that was that was wild. But you know, very humbling, and that was like necessary. That was a necessary part of the experience, the humbling part. I feel like I needed to be drug on the gravel to like kind of like, you know, kind of till the soil of the soul to start getting the kind of songs that I needed to write in order to have a career out of songwriting. Like it couldn't just be a hobby anymore, because to me it was like it's not a hobby anymore. It's not just this thing I do. This is going to be my career. And my dad was like my number one believer. And, you know, he was like, not only should you do this, you have to do this. Like, you need to do this. And if you don't, like, everybody else is calling you a fool for doing this, I think you would be a fool not to do this. And he was literally the only person saying this. But I remember him saying, because, you know, he would hear these. I'd send him my demos all the time. Like, he was the first person I'd ever send a song to kind of get a critique. Yeah. And because he's just like a good old boy working. Like, he had no, like, dog in the fight as far as the music business. It was just, like, very much a knee-jerk reaction with him. Either yes or no, green light, red light, yellow light, whatever it is, it was always a pure response. So, you know, I'd send him a lot of songs, and I remember him saying, like, why don't you sing these songs? Like, you sound really good singing them. Like, I know you're trying to get somebody else to sing them, but maybe you should sing them. And I'd be like, no, Dad, I don't do that. That's not me. I'm the songwriter. Like, that's not what I do. And he'd be like, okay, whatever, you do whatever you want to do, but I'm just telling you. And then one day he died suddenly at a very young age, at a very unfair age, much like your father. And his last words to me were, write a good song for me. And so he knew how important songs were me. Even in his dying breath, he knew what songs could do. And so when he died, like, that person that used to answer that question the way I did, no, I don't sing the songs, someone else does, that person died with him. And suddenly it was like this death and a rebirth at the same time, a birth, really. Like, it's almost like my brain was rewired instantly. Even, like, I said goodbye to him on an iPhone 8 in the middle of Kentucky, going, like, 98 miles an hour trying to get to him. And I just knew instantly. It was like, even though I wasn't there to see it, like, my whole brain just instantly changed. Like, my identity changed. Because, you know, I'm a junior, Stephen Wilson Jr. I've lived in his shadow very much my whole life. And so it was like that shadow just literally went away, and the sun was just like just barreling on my face. And it was so bright and so painful. And it's like, now it's all about you, dude. And you don't have that shadow to hide behind anymore, which is a blessing. And at the same time, like, very much a painful revelation, and very much an adjustment for my existence. It was, for all intents and purposes, an existential crisis that I was having. And so that's really where the artist stuff began. And, like, after he died, I didn't know what to do. I just, like writing songs seemed more important than ever, and music seemed more important than ever. And I had to figure out a path forward to getting the songs that I had written recorded, and really just start diving into documenting what I was going through, because I really wanted to make a record, in the sense of the word record, like record keeping. Like, I wanted to keep record of what I was going through. Everybody goes through this. Like, grief is like the most human thing we got. I didn't know that I was making a record, and it was going to be called Son of Dad, and I was going to release it 5 years later. I just started just writing everything that I was feeling. And so the record is, it's, you know, some of the songs are before he died, and you can kind of hear that. And then some of the songs are, like, literally just shortly after he died.
How quickly after your dad died did you feel like going to the guitar? Because sometimes it can feel like the last thing you want to do.
I always write my lyrics first. I don't really write with a guitar. Like, I write the song out before I even touch music. So that's always been a blessing. I can write a song on an airplane, a train, anywhere. Like, I don't, and that's been really good for me. So I really just kind of use that methodology more so than sitting down. Because, yeah, you're right. I didn't feel like singing. I didn't feel like playing guitar. But I just knew I had all these words and thoughts just running through my head. And so it was like, I was grieving my father on a massive level. And then there was a global pandemic. So it was like a bit of hysteria going on with me personally. And so that's part of the record. And then a couple years kind of go into it. And then songs like Hang In There and Father's Son and Grief Is Only Love started coming out. And you can kind of start to see, like, I'm figuring out how to live with the grief. The craziness has settled down, and now I'm starting to process it. Like, I'm starting I'm at least like able to see the numbers on the board and start to kind of figure out where to place them to try to like solve this formula that is grief. Not that I have.
When you were in it, did you feel like, oh yeah, I'm writing these songs about grief and about dad? Did that cross your mind? Were you aware that that's what you were doing, or do you think it was too subliminal?
No, yeah, it was very subliminal. I didn't really think anything like that. I wasn't thinking like that. This is what I'm doing. I'm going to make this record about this and that. And I just really wanted to just kind of stay true to what I was feeling, just like one step at a time, one song at a time. And the songs just kept showing up. And some of them were co-written. Some of them, like, a lot of them, you know, a lot of these songs were written with some of my other friends that, you know, have gone through insane grief. This song called Twisted on the record, I wrote with Jeremy Spillman and Connor Thewitt. And Connor's, his mother had died a couple years as well. So we both were grieving our parents. And, like, you know, that song very much came out of our grief. You know, he literally just was talking about his mom, and he's like, yeah, man, it's life is twisted. And, you know, and I was just like, that's got to be something. Beer's cold, but the bars are closed. There's a drought in the wettest part of Oklahoma. Tornadoes roll through town on Christmas. Nobody's hurt, but the house is missing. God is good, life is twisted. God is good, life is twisted. You know, that song kind of poured out of that in that way. So, like, you know, there's been people put in my path that have been really helpful. And there's this guy named Jeffrey Steele, who I wrote Patches and Grief Is Only Love and Cuckoo with. And he lost his 13-year-old son in an ATV accident. And it just, I mean, it just destroyed him, as you would imagine. And so he's been through grief on a level like you know, many few people ever experience. And so I've had these incredible, like, kind of angels just dropped in my life that have had their own levels of grief. So it's really not all just about me. It's been like I've had so many other people kind of show me their grief and really be able to pull from all of these. Because I didn't want to make this album all about me, like, because that seemed selfish. And I wanted it to be outward. And, like, you know, I wanted to use my experiences to authenticate these emotions, so I knew they were coming from an authentic place. But I didn't want to make it all about me. And I think I was really blessed to have so many people just drop into my life to give me their perspectives, too. So that, you know, these songs could have different angles and perhaps reach people in different times. And I found just recently that they have, like, they've touched people that have lost all kinds of losses on so many levels, from loved ones, like, whether they're humans or beloved pets. Like, it's helped so many people, like, kind of process this thing. So, yeah, it really is, like, I approached it more, you know, I had to kind of be a good scientist about it. I didn't want to be, like, just, like, this weeping mess of a man pouring his emotions out. I had to kind of stay scientifically neutral to what I was experiencing and try to give it its truest footing, because I feel like that's what science really does. It's like a a truth detector. It's really a filter for truth. User bias is like the worst thing you can have in a scientific experiment. So like I tried to keep my user bias out of it. And even though it was very much about me. So it was this dichotomy of a scientific mind and a spiritual mind kind of dancing together.
How has it been to have an album explicitly about grief out there in the world? Like, how's it been to talk to people like me about it, to open up about it, to open up about something that is painful like that? Because it's not something that us as human beings find easy to talk about, particularly with strangers, let alone, you know, our own families sometimes. Have you always been somebody that's able to talk about your dad and to talk about, yeah, how you've been feeling? Or has music been that outlet for you that's easier than talking?
Music's way easier than talking for me. Like singing the songs is like, I hate, it's a, maybe comes across selfish saying this, but it's very healing for me in addition to the, you know, to the audience. It's a two-way thing, it seems like. And it really, it's really helped me process so much of it. And I haven't necessarily been the most open person in the past, especially about emotions and stuff. But being a staff songwriter, I have to say it's given me a lot of advantages in that department, because you, when you start songwriting, especially in the beginning of your career, like it's very much a matchmaking process that's happening with two total strangers, two total spirits. And, you know, every co-writer that I ever have worked with, like say Jeffrey Steele, who's a dear friend of mine, we've written like 50 songs now, but there was one day when we had written no songs together, and that was day one. And they're, you know, they're strangers and you're strangers, and you have to literally like pour your hearts out in front of each other if you really want to get a song that's worth a damn. And so that's been helpful for me to kind of like, because I've had to get vulnerable or become vulnerable with strangers quite regularly in those writing rooms. So
would you explicitly then go into a writing session and talk about the fact that you lost your dad as a way into to writing a song about it?
You know, I never really wanted to just try to write songs about him, but if it came up, I was never bashful about talking about it. Like I said, there's been so many people that have come into my life that have dealt with losses, so it just was an easy thing to kind of, it would just conjure up a lot. And, you know, there's a song on there called Father Son that I wrote on Zoom with two guys that I barely know. Like you would never think you would write something so personal and biographical with two, you know, like complete strangers, essentially. Like, you know, I couldn't have written that song with my brother or my sister, like who I've known my whole life. Like I introduce myself every time I play a show is like, I'm Stephen Wilson Jr. and I am my father's son. I was just kind of talking about that. And, you know, and it's always been like a song title that I had in my, you know, especially after he died, you know, but I was like, man, I'm not going, you know, I'm not ready to write that. I'm not, you know, I would tell myself every day, I'm not ready to write that. I'm not ready to write that. Not today, not today. And just so happened I was on Zoom. It was the middle of the pandemic, kind of towards the end of it, maybe. And, you know, I said that again, and those guys were like, have you written that song yet? And I was like, no, like, you know, and I'm not sure if it's going to be today. It's been like a song, obviously, in my kind of in running around my head. And you know, and I mean, that's what I said to myself. And for whatever reason, I just kind of, I didn't say no to it that day. And, you know, I was like, what's the worst that could happen? You know, we write the wrong song or something, and, you know, I just start over. It's not going to be the end of the world, like, if we didn't nail. And it just kind of fell out, you know, and a lot of my, if not most of the songs that on the album, I've been that way. They're not like these songs that I have to sit around and smash my head up against the wall for months trying to write. they just kind of fall out of the sky, and I just, you know, just try to be present to capture all the lyrics. And that song was just very much there. And an hour and a half later, we had the song. I've never known better. I sing at every show, and I see grown men break down right in front of me. And
how about you? How do you feel singing it?
Oh, it's tough. Like, I just sang it at Red Rocks a couple of days ago in front of 10,000 people. And yeah, it was a hard one to get through. Not going to lie. It was, you know, I took everything I could to get through that one. And it's not going to probably be easy in the future. I know that. You know, that's really not, but it's not about me. It's, you know, it's, I'm more of a vessel for it, and I can sit around and complain about how hard it is. But, you know, at the end of the day, you just got to do your best and try to get through it. And I feel like the audience, like, knows that, like, if you're just being honest with them. And I didn't have to, like, contrive anything and pretend like I was, like, this tough guy singing a sad song about his dad. I think people would just kind of feel it. And if you just kind of stay true to it, hey, if you break down in the middle of the song, that's what happens. You know, like, I don't think anybody's going to be like, boo, I want my money back. Like, you know, like.
Do you feel like people have responded in a different way to these songs? Because it's not a subject that's very, it's not top 40 material most of the time. It's about young love usually, or heartbreak from a spouse, from a partner. It's not often that we deal with loss in that sense in popular song. So have you found, like, a different connection? You say you see men breaking down when you play it. Do you think that it's because these sorts of things aren't really heard very often in songs?
Yeah, I think so. And like, music has a way of, like, it has a way of affecting the heart that words, conversation, dialogue, rhetoric, conversation just can't. I don't know how. It's like, it's got its own key to the heart. And that, it's like a special shaped key. And, like, only music has it. Like, you can sit around and say, I could literally, like, recite lyrics to a song, and, you know, it wouldn't affect somebody the same way until it's wrapped up in the melody and the music. And men especially, because we really like to try to understand everything and control everything and have a place for everything, like whether it's a carburetor or like a shingle on a roof. You know, like, grief doesn't make sense to men. It's like, it doesn't add up. And it's very, very difficult. So when you rap a song like that, it's suddenly like they just see it for the first time, and you can see that in their eyes. You can literally see them understanding it for the first time, like for the first time ever. It's like, oh, like, that's what it is. And literally that epiphany to them, I think, is what really evokes the emotion, because they've really just been trying to figure it out. And when you understand something, it becomes far less fearful. Mm-hmm. And when, you know, people fear what they don't understand, and people don't like to fear anything, you know. And so men, especially tough guys, they, like, in the face of fear, they counter it with toughness usually. Oh, they grit up and they shut down, you know, in the face of fear. And so I feel like the music kind of like dissolves all that. Mm-hmm. And you know, that it just kind of, it takes all that away, because now they understand it, therefore they don't fear it. And And because they understand it, it gives them like a lot of peace. This is what it's done for me.
I was gonna say, do you feel like you now understand your grief better?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was like, you know, I spent years just kind of in the dark, like trying to do math that was just never adding up. And then one day it was just like, that's what it is. Like you kind of just see it. And it's just far less scary. And then you start to get into this acceptance phase of it. And it becomes like this really kind of beautiful part of your life. Like in a weird way, like, now, like, I feel close to my father, you know, through that understanding.
Okay, does singing these songs and has writing these songs brought you closer to your father, or perhaps giving you a more rounded view of him?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's been a lot of it, is just kind of understanding his role in my life, and then understanding like the loss of that role and kind of where my existence lives within it. And yeah, I mean, it's been massively healing for me, and that's why it honestly seemed so important to release it, because it was like, it would almost be selfish for me to just to keep this to myself, and because it helped me so much. So if it helped me, there's a chance that it could help somebody else. And it really, like, I do a lot of beta testing. Like, it's not like I just wrote these songs and recorded them without ever playing them. Like, I did a lot of beta testing on people and seeing how they would work and seeing how they affected people. And, I guess in science we would call that field research, market research. And you get, like, you get pretty immediate results. You know really quickly whether or not a song like that is affecting people, like, mm-hmm. when you see strangers just weeping and a lot of times they don't weep right there in front of you. Sometimes they listen to the song and they keep it together, and then they write you 2 days later on Instagram a 7-paragraph like message of what that meant to them. Mm-hmm. And you know, so that's really kind of how I gathered all my data to really make, you know, any kind of accurate assumption about whether or not a song, you know, this was the right song to record, or whether or not this was like an effective song at all, you know, or if this was just all about me and my grief, or was this like really like an outward manifestation that has an ability to connect with other people. And that connection has been healing, so.
And how do you feel like you would have coped without songwriting and creativity?
It would have been very difficult, honestly. Like music has really saved me in this particular moment. It's really saved me in my entire life. And then like just through writing songs, it's been very helpful for me. So me writing songs and releasing them is really me paying it forward from that experience that I had as a kid, because mm-hmm. that was just so, I just, the effect on me was so visceral. And I just really, if I can have any, I don't know, ability, really more of responsibility to, I guess, provide something like that in the future, then it seems like you almost have to do it rather than wanting to do it or anything like that. It's more of like a need for that people need, and yeah. It's less about me, it's more about them.
And where do you think you're at with your grief now and your relationship with your dad? Do you feel like this album is a turning point to a new chapter in your life? Do you feel like you've said all you need to say about grief and your dad, or do you feel like there's more to be written?
Oh, there's a lot more to be written. But yeah, this is just one kind of snippet of that. But I'm definitely in a different place with the grief. I mean, even since the record was released, I mean, I release is like the best word I can use. I when the album was released, I was like, you released your album, Son of Dad. And I just remember thinking it, like, it is like literally a release. Like it is, like it felt like I could let go of a lot of things for the first time. I've been holding on to them for 4 years, like kind of trying to cram them into this box, and now they're in the box, and now I just have to give it away.
Is it cathartic to know that they're out there now and that they're just there for people when they need them?
Yeah, absolutely, because now they're finding their own life now. Like they're out of my hands. Like they're like 22 little doves that I raised from eggs, you know, and now they're just kind of going their own way. And, you know, and the whole, like, you know, you get into the whole criticism of the record thing and the, like, are people going to like it? Or, you know, it just let me let go of all of that stuff, having it be about my dad and be about such a personal moment. It really helped kind of like just diffuse any of like that potential criticism that could come up. Like, is this like, I don't really care if you like it or don't like it. Like, this is just my truth. It's really, you know, that's, and it really helps with that. Like, not that the album's gotten like any bad reviews or anything, but it just,
yeah.
If it, whatever, like, people say about it, it just...
Sense of perspective about the importance of those things, yeah. If we round things off by looking at the you now and the you that started off listening to that Tim McGraw song and then wanting to have your own guitar and your own voice, do you feel like creativity and songwriting still holds as an important place in your life? And do you see that continuing and still being that source of self-understanding and healing that it has been for you through these years of coming to terms with losing your dad?
Yeah, I mean, the grief is still, I mean, it's not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. If anything, it's just kind of evolving. Mm-hmm. You know, I think everybody that's lost someone like that, someone, you know, I've heard it over and over and over again. Honestly, I ad nauseum, and it doesn't help, but it also doesn't hurt. But, you know, everybody says it never goes away, it just gets easier. And, you know, which is not necessarily the thing you want to hear, like, right after you lose someone, like, oh, this is never going to go away, like, you mean, like, but it isn't, you know, and I don't want it to, you know, and there's a line in Grief is Only Love that, you know, the one that spoke to me the most, you know, that I miss my father every day. The kind of pain I pray don't fade away.
I miss my father every day. The kind of pain I pray don't fade away. And the ones above guide me down the road. Yeah, grief is on. It's got no place to go. From my great granddad in the ground to all the ghosts in my hometown. Yeah, they're the ones that find me down the road.
You know, that was big for me to understand that, because, like, you know, it corroborated what everybody's saying. It doesn't go away, it just gets easier. But I don't want it to go away. Like, you know, and that was, because if that goes away, then that means he's gone away. And I don't want him to go away. Like, I can imagine you felt that with your dad too.
Yeah, it's a feeling of, yeah, wanting to recognize the importance of them in your life, but also having to be able to make space for you to live your life as well, and to not let that grief cast too long a shadow over everything else that you do, isn't it? It's finding that balance.
Yeah, and I'm grateful for it, and I don't really want it to go anywhere. You know, it's like, it's become a friend versus like, an enemy that a lot of people make it out to be. They can really destroy people's lives, and I understand why. I can totally see how you could just crawl into a basement and never want to come out again. And I don't fault anybody for doing that. But, you know, with me moving forward with creativity, I'm still going to tap in. I'm still going to, my friend that is that grief, I have a feeling is still going to be tagging along. and I've written a lot of new songs for the next record, and they kind of keep showing up in the same way they did in the past. And I'm just going to try to keep record of it like I did before, like try to be the best scientist I can and document everything in real time and try to be present for it all. It's going to be different, you know, like I went through that particular time, and now there's just going to be this particular time. No one is better than the other. They're just like their own unique chapters of this experience that we're all going through. But you know, that sent, like, if someone says, "Hey man, you need to write another Son of Dad for record two," like, I can't do that. Like, that's impossible. That's like, that time is gone. Like, it's, and it can only be that. And now I just have to write something else that is true to the time that is now. And there will be a few songs that I wrote during that process that will be on the new record too. It's I would call it to be continued, not so much the end and the grief is over. It's very much more to write about, and very much just the beginning of it. And that's why I put that at the very end of the record, a song called The Beginning, because it feels like just the beginning. Tried to create a field guide for grief, like, you know, and hopefully like that will help somebody after I'm gone.
I'm sure it will. What I really liked as well, am I right in saying that at the end of Father Son, you have a little voice memo of your dad talking? Is that your dad talking at the end? Yeah, I thought that was really nice. And like you say, you know, calling a recording of time, you've put him down there, which is another thing which I think is really powerful about when we make music and when we put down a record. It's that putting something down for eternity, and you're immortalizing him as much as you are yourself and your songs. So I'm sure he'll be looking down and be very proud of the album. So
yeah, that was the intention behind it. I wanted to, like you said, immortalize him. It was like, he wanted to be cremated, and we have like his memorial is a cross behind his stock pond. And, you know, he didn't really have a gravestone for me to visit. He doesn't have like something with his name on it, so to speak, you know, like, and this is what he wanted. But I feel like me putting him in that song was my way of creating a place for him to always be, and no one can take that away. And that was one of our last conversations together. We were just riding in a truck, I was driving, and he was just talking. And for some reason, I've never done this ever in the history of our life, I just, for some reason, I pulled my voice memo up, my voice memo app that I got up right now, and and I just pressed record, and he had no clue I did that. And I just kind of scooted it over to his side of the bench seat, and he just started talking. It was like it was really weird. It was like he was rewinding through his life, and like it was almost like his life was on a VHS, and he was just going through it while we were driving, and it just, I don't know, something said record this, and now I know why it said you got to record this. And so it was Father's Day weekend too. It was really weird.
Well, that makes it even more sweet. Well, thank you, Stephen, for your time. I think what you've done with the album is really important. it's something that I totally agree with in terms of putting your grief out there and sharing it with people and giving it a home in other people's lives and other people's hearts. And I wish you the best in the future and with the album and with your future shows, and hopefully I'll see you over here in the UK very soon.
I look forward to it. I'll be over there in the spring, it's looking like. So
cool, great. Hopefully see you then. Take care, man.
All right, I look forward to it. Thank you, Al, for your time. God bless.
For more information about Stephen and his music, visit his website, StephenWilsonJrMusic.com. Please help by rating and subscribing to this podcast, as it will help to spread the word about Feels Like Healing. Thanks for listening.